The Islamic State is one of the most lethal and successful jihadist groups in modern history, surpassing even Al-Qaeda. Thousands of its followers have marched across Syria and Iraq, subjugating millions, enslaving women, beheading captives, and daring anyone to stop them. Thousands more have spread terror beyond the Middle East under the Islamic State's black flag. How did the Islamic State attract so many followers and conquer so much land? Based almost entirely on primary sources in Arabic, including ancient religious texts and secret Al-Qaeda and Islamic State letters that few have seen, William Kant's new book, The ISIS Apocalypse, explores how religious fervor, strategic calculation, and doomsday prophecy shape the Islamic State's past and foreshadow its dark future. William McCance directs the project on U.S. relations with the Islamic world at the Brookings Institution. He's adjunct faculty at Johns Hopkins University and a former U.S. State Department senior advisor. Again, the name of the new book is The ISIS Apocalypse, and we welcome William McCance to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
My pleasure.
Great pleasure to have you back on the program. Since this book first came out in hardcover, I assume the story has changed a bit, hasn't it?
Yeah, quite a bit. I mean, at the time when the book came out, ISIS was primarily focused on building its kingdom of God on earth in Syria and Iraq and other places in the Middle East. And since then, they have taken their cause global, carrying out attacks in the West and then also in Muslim-majority countries as well.
What have been the factors and the ingredients that has brought that about, do you think?
Well, there's three competing theories. One theory is that this is a competition with Al-Qaeda. It's about competition for human resources. So they want to carry out these spectacular attacks abroad in order to attract more people to their cause. Another theory has it that they were always going to do this, that they were just waiting to have the capability, and once they had built up their state, then they went global. And then there's the third theory, the one I subscribe to, which is that this is a response to the coalition's actions against them in Syria and Iraq. If you look at the timing of when they decided to go global, when they made the announcement, when they started building their terror network, it synchronizes with the decision of the United States to begin bombing them in August of 2014. I mean, to be honest, it's difficult to decide between the three theories because we don't know a lot about their internal decision making, but the third one is the one I subscribe to.
How cohesive a group of leaders does this group have?
Well, it had been very cohesive until recently, but the United States and its allies are putting a lot of strain on the leadership. I mean, for one, U.S. planes have killed many of the senior leaders in ISIS. And also, there's quite a bit of infighting now, of course, because there are scarcer resources. So people are pointing the finger at one another. Some of them are trying to flee. There's a lot more disarray. So I would say that the leadership is much less cohesive than it had been.
But that doesn't diminish the strength of ISIS overall.
It does. It does, and particularly in Syria and Iraq, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they are less lethal as an international terror organization. In fact, I would argue they have more incentives to carry out attacks abroad because in their minds they believe that it's a way to deter further attacks on their state. So, in other words, the more that they are squeezed at home, the more incentive they have to try and bring the pain to their enemies. So if anything, our success against them in Syria and Iraq is prompting them to carry out more attacks abroad.
You write about this in the book, and I'm hoping you can give us a thumbnail sketch of it, of how the Islamic State was able to attract so many followers and conquer so much land relatively quickly.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that they didn't face a much stiff competition. I remember the American army had withdrawn from Iraq by 2011. There was a civil war next door in Syria, and the Syrian regime's attention was focused more on militants who were coming after the capital in Damascus. So the Islamic State, or ISIS, had a lot of free rein, and of course they were helped immensely by the fact that they attracted a number of former members of Saddam's regime who were good at setting up and running authoritarian states And they also had a very capable propagandist who portrayed this nascent state as a fulfillment of prophecy and the return of God's kingdom on earth, which attracted the bulk of the tens of thousands of foreign fighters coming into Syria to fight. And those provided the shock troops for the organization and proved very effective on the battlefield.
When you think, we've been talking about the current state of the leadership, but bring us to the leaders in those early days and bringing this group together and the ideals that came forward very early on.
Yeah, from its inception in 2006, the organization has been dedicated to establishing an Islamic state or a caliphate. Its early leaders were more driven by apocalyptic timetables and made a series of bad decisions. Many of those leaders were killed by the United States and Iraqi forces in the previous decade, and the guys who came out on top were still inspired in many ways by Islamic scripture, but had a more pragmatic turn, and they focused much more on exploiting grievances on the ground and security vacuums in order to set up a state. And as I said, they were helped a lot by former members of the Saddam regime who rose through the ranks at the end of the last decade. And those were the guys that really helped the organization go in, assassinate leaders who could have stood against them, and set up a security and intelligence apparatus that successfully repressed dissent whenever they would take over a town.
A strong factor in all of this is the doomsday prophecy or doomsday vision that you mentioned in the subtitle of the book. Talk a little bit about that vision.
Sure. So most Muslims, particularly conservative Muslims, believe that the world will come to an end and that Muhammad prophesied its end, but they disagree over the interpretation of those prophecies. Many of them have to do with events in Syria and Iraq. So whenever you have major political upheaval in those countries, it invites an apocalyptic interpretation. So when the United States invaded Iraq in 2003, all of a sudden this framework became very popular, and it was the Islamic State who used it as a major part of their recruiting pitch, portraying themselves as the fulfillment of a prophecy that says that at the end of times, the Islamic Empire or caliphate will be restored to its former glory. And so they have presented the Islamic State as a fulfillment of that prophecy. And it's one reason that they've attracted the lion's share of the foreigners who have come to Syria and Iraq to fight.
Let's talk about the attraction for those who are becoming part of ISIS. We see even recently in a mall attack in Minnesota and a man identified as an ISIS soldier. What does that mean, and how ultimately are people like him, and obviously details are still sketchy, but people like him brought into the group or at very least identify with the group?
So you have what you might characterize as concentric circles of membership. You have people who are honest to God members of the organization. They've totally drunk the Kool-Aid. They've gone to Syria and Iraq. They've returned home to fight. But then you have another circle moving out further from the organization that has loose connections with ISIS networks. And then at the very fringes, a lot of what we've seen in the United States actually are people who are inspired somehow by the ISIS religious vision but have no organization ties to ISIS or any connection with its network. And a number of these people are not very well informed about the Islamic State's program. But they see themselves as soldiers in its cause. And so whenever they want to attack their fellow citizens, they portray themselves as members of the organization. Some of them are just plain mentally ill and may have committed these crimes under another banner had ISIS not existed. These are people I call ISIS-ish. They have taken up the cause of ISIS because they know it attracts media attention, but they're not necessarily more committed to it than some other cause. It's what's convenient for them. So you have a mix of characters then that are hold themselves out as soldiers in the Islamic State's army.
So as the world, not just this country, but as the world tries to combat this group, in your mind, what are we doing right and what are we doing wrong?
Well, I think what we're doing right is the campaign in Syria and Iraq, which has dramatically eroded the organization's territory. And this territory, they were able to train recruits and broadcast their message freely. That is now under extreme pressure and will continue to crumble. I think that's what's going right. I think what's going wrong is the backlash that has come to, as a result of the ISIS terror attacks. ISIS is deliberately trying to polarize Western societies and especially create suspicion of Muslim members of those societies. Their hope is that the political backlash will alienate those Muslims and provide them with more recruits. And you would have to say, at least in the short term, they have been somewhat successful in doing this, given the current politics in Europe and the United States. And the worry among counterterrorism professionals is that even were ISIS and its state to crumble in Syria and Iraq, there will be a long legacy from the political backlash against Muslims that they have created in the West.
And with that point, you say that even though they suffered ridicule for outsized ambitions early on, they have overcome that.
That's right. And it will be very difficult to put their vision back in the bottle. It was laughable in 2006 when they first proclaimed themselves a state and really a proto-caliphate. But the fact that they have been so wildly successful over the past few years means that even though their caliphal project fails and their state crumbles, still it will take a generation for the memory of that to fade. And this is by the testimony of their own leadership. And I think rightly so. They have achieved something momentous. And they can rightly argue that it's only a matter of time before they're able to try and do it again in light of their convincing success in Syria and Iraq over the past few years. So their vision is going to be with us for a long time, as are people who are willing to try it out again.
The name of the book is The ISIS Apocalypse, The History, Strategy, and Doomsday Vision of the Islamic State. The book has a new preface. It's out in paperback from Picador. William McCann, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The ISIS Apocalypse, it's published by Picador. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.